Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome the night.
Radio show where we discuss all the latest movies and news from the world of horror. Joining me tonight, as always, is my co-host, Ian. Ian, are you there?
I am.
How are you this week, sir?
I'm doing all right.
Yep. You got that cold weather, rain, everything. It's that time of year now where it's cold, and I like the cold, and it gets a little too cold sometimes at night, but we're here. And we're gonna pull through on these rainy bipolar days. It's like rain, then it's supposed to get snow, so it's just all over the place. But one thing doesn't change, and that's talking horror, and that's what we're gonna do tonight on the show. We got some. I think it's a good show, just because this is something we don't normally do that often, and that's have a review of a movie coming out this week. Before it comes out. Well, technically it's out, but not this early. Usually it's the following week, so it's a big deal. You know, it's not. We don't do that often. You know, I think we did it for like Three from Hell, but that was the week before. Jeepers Creepers was three was the week of, so it's not really, you know, a big major release. The same week it comes out, so it's big. It's big on our terms, but we made it happen. I made it happen because we needed something. I didn't really take the bullet, but I just decided, you know, screw it. We need something because there really wasn't anything else to do, and we're gonna probably plan something big, a bigger review for next week. So we needed the show time. So we got that planned, and Ian managed to get something watched. I'm looking forward to hearing how that turned out. And there's a little bit of news. I guess we can start with some news, Ian, if you're interested, before we get into our review of Dr. Sleep. The first thing is a trailer dropped for The Invisible Man. Has nothing to do with the universe. I don't know if it does or doesn't. It is Universal. It is Blumhouse. But I don't think it's like an actual Universal monster, Invisible Man. It's just Invisible Man. And it looks okay. It looks like, you know, Lee Whannell, of course, you know, who did Upgrade and Insidious, the final chapter, part three. And then, of course, Saw. He was behind the writing partners of Saw. But this one, it's like, when I watched the trailer, another thing they didn't give, it just felt like, I don't know if you ever seen the movie, Ian, with Famke Janssen, but it looked like 100 Feet, but done differently. You know, instead of being at house arrest and your dead husband's coming back to kick the living hell out of you, it's your dead husband who committed suicide and you're going crazy and he's stalking you. And just, it looked like 100 Feet. Again, I don't know if you've seen that film, Ian, have
I
you?
I don't think I have.
Yeah. That's the one thing. It just looked like 100 feet, but done differently on a bigger, of course, a bigger budget. And, like, of course, Invisible Man, a little bit of Hollow Man in there. So they're going to be that whole, like, how did he get invisible aspect, mystery set in. I mean, it doesn't look bad, but, it looked like 100 feet, and I've seen that film before. It's just in a different setting and, you know, has all these things here and there. I'm sure it'll be good. I mean, it's Lee Whannell. I've liked most, pretty much all his, everything that he's done, you know, from Saw, for his installment in Insidious, I dug for the most part. Upgrade, I enjoyed. So I'm interested to see what he does with this one, and it comes out February. I don't know if you've seen the trailer, Ian, but did you check out the trailer for The Invisible Man?
No, I saw pictures from it, but honestly, I thought it was a joke. Not gonna lie, like I can't tell. But no, I didn't know that. I didn't see the trailer, but I'm gonna have to definitely go back and check the trailer for it.
Yeah, because it's because I know like the big uproar is like, oh, they're showing too much in the trailer, and then he had to come out on Twitter, I think, and said, oh, they didn't show everything. So like there's still plenty of stuff not shown, so he kind of had to come out and kind of retcon, I guess, even though. You know,
yeah.
Not giving too much away. I don't know. But it is what it is. I mean, it comes out in February, whatever. Our review will be there when it comes out. Then the other minor news, and I don't even really want to talk about it, but Paranormal Activity is coming out again in 2021.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I believe it was 2021. It's like they're bringing it back. Still only seen the
still
first one. That's probably what we're going to do. We got to do that marathon, Ian. We have to go through. But there's not a much, probably leading up to that, maybe, if the world's still here. But
right.
We'll go through those films one by one, even though I had to go through the first one. But, yeah, so new installment of Paranormal Activity. I don't know what they're going to do because I've only seen the first one, so I don't know where they could go on. With that series. And then the other news is that they're working on a Scream 5. So, woohoo. There's another, without, of course, not the helm of Wes Craven behind it. So it's going to be, again, who knows what that'll be like. I haven't seen any of the TV series. I don't know, they got like canceled and brought back. I don't know. I didn't keep up with it. Too many things to watch.
Yeah, neither did
coming
I.
Out. Yeah, and plus the mask didn't look all that great. From I think we talked about that before, but yeah, that's
yeah, we went on a big rant about it.
Yeah, do you have anything to say about Scream 5 coming out or Paranormal Activity 2021 before we get onto the main topics?
Just mostly why?
Yeah.
Why?
They should learn from like Terminator: Dark Fate. Because, like, that movie, it was fine. You know, I saw it over the weekend. It was fine. But, like, they do all this stuff, like, to bring out these franchises back, and people aren't really clamoring for them. I mean, and then when you have Terminator Dark Fate, it's the same fucking movie over and over, just with a different person like I said, it's an okay watch, but they do so much disservice to the franchise in the first act, in the first fucking scene of this movie. And then, like, you're just like, well, fuck my enjoyment because of
right.
what they do. And, you know, not to say it's like you can't do that. I mean, it's been done before. But I'm just saying, like, if you want to go that route, you don't have to do what they did. You can always do something else or not even – because this movie, it bombed, all right? It didn't make that much money. It made, like, $28 million on, like, $100-some million budget. It didn't do well at all. Like I said, people weren't clamoring for it. I mean, even after fucking Genesis, which was god-fucking-awful, all right? That's one of the worst fucking Terminator movies there is. It's probably the worst. And it was, like, the worst theater experience, not, you know, just movie in general. Like, oh, my God. And, you know, it was, like, right up there, like, Suicide Squad. Like, this movie's awful. And it's just like one of those things where it's just like, I don't know why. And they'll go back and they'll retcon this one And like, okay, that one doesn't involve anything. You know, that one's, we'll retcon it again and do a whole nother series. And that's, I don't know, they just don't learn, Ian. No, they never learn. They're looking for it. Like, oh, it's a franchise. We got Linda Hamilton back. We got Arnie back. The people will flock to it. And like, they should have learned from Genesis, even though Genesis did make more money than Dark Fate. But if you watch Genesis, it's a terrible movie. It is terrible. And it just does not make fucking sense. And it just, it was mind-numbingly bad. And this one, again, it's better. It's better than Genesis, Dark Fate is. But they just, like, they'll just keep going, making these movies. Like, oh, people will flock to it, you know. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
what's going
sad.
On? You know, yeah, a little tirade there that I had to get out. Dr. Sleep, Ian. Dr. Sleep is out among us, and it is the sequel to The Shining. In a sense, it's a sequel to The Shining. Because this portrays the events of Danny Torrance as a grown-up and him living with the events of what happened at the Overlook Hotel and what he's, you know, been doing now. So the film starts out with we're introduced to our basically our villain of the movie, Rosie the Hat. And Rosie the Hat is a leader of this small band of, you could say, sort of gypsies in a sense. They're just like a caravan of people. They, you know, they drive, you know, caravans, RV, you know, just across. Because what they do is, it's not really a spoiler, because it is central to the plot. They track down or find people who shine or have, you know, psychic abilities, basically. And they kill them and eat their shine, or what they call smoke. And they're technically dead, in a sense, because once they inhale the shine, they don't become immortal, but if you keep eating the shine over and over, you know, you can live a prosperous life. And so that's what they do. They just track down, you know, people to eat their shine. And then we have, you know, that's our main Rosie the Hat and her band of gypsies, in a sense. Smoke, technically smoke, you know, smoker gypsies. And then we get a little bit backstory of Danny Torrance and what he did with the lady in room 237 and how he's, you know, we still have, what was it, Dick? Dick Halloran, he comes back to him and, you know, in spirit form, just to tell him things. Like, what I always did was, you know, he said, make this box, look at it and make it of your own in your mind. And that's what he did to, like, hide and hold all the spirits that are haunting him after the Overlook Hotel, because, like, they were following him around, and especially the lady in 237. And he put them in boxes, and he put them in, like, the recesses of his mind to make sure that you don't, you know, don't bother him anymore, and he has them all locked away, like basically hiding your demons, basically. And so he goes on his natural life, and he grows up, and, of course, adult Danny Torrance is played by Ewan McGregor, who does a great job. I enjoyed his performance. And he basically turns into his father, where he's an alcoholic, you know, drinking and just, you know, innocence, having sex with, like, prostitutes, stuff like that. And it starts out, you know, in, like, 2011, and there's this big, you know, this girl, her name's Abra, and it's her birthday. And she's, like, saying, oh, I can do that, you know, because the clown's doing, like, magic tricks and everything. And she, you know, she's does this blast of stuff, you know, of the shine. And it travels, you know, to the people who's there. So it hits Danny, and it also hits Rosie. And they both, you know, they get that, like, that's the biggest, you know, sign, you know, shine I've ever seen. You know, she has so much power. And that causes Danny to move to New Hampshire, I believe. And he lives there for 8 years. And he meets up with Billy, I think it's Billy, and he becomes his friend, and he works at like the hospital, and so basically, Danny becomes sort of like this. They call him Dr. Sleep because there's a cat that goes into like the hospital beds and the rooms, and the cat can pick out when a person's gonna die. And so, basically, Danny goes in there and starts talking to him. And they're also, you know, some of them can shine, I guess. And he talks them to sleep, basically. And so now Abra is all grown up, and Rosie and her band of gypsies are basically still trying to find her, and they both sort of have a clash when there's a murder of a little boy. And so she finds out about Abra because she got into, you know, she says, oh, we had a looker, and it's like a very strong looker. And of course, Danny and Abra start having conversations on the wall in his apartment. And after the death of the boy, he starts to basically sort of help her, because he's like saying he doesn't really want to help her, but then like Dick's like saying, I did it for you. Now it's your turn to, you know, your time to return the favor for her. And so that's technically the part, you know, point of the movie, is he's trying to protect her while going through the battle with Rosie and them, you know, eating the shine. And overall, it's a really good movie. I've really enjoyed it. And here's the thing. It's two hours and 26 minutes. It's 2 hours and 26 minutes. Doesn't feel like that at all. It goes, man. It just like it doesn't really let up. There's not a slow part, and it just keeps your interest for the entire runtime. And that's the one thing. This is the best King adaptation this year. It's better than It Chapter 2, and it's better than Pet Sematary. And again, it was like 2 hours and a half. This is around the same time frame. Way better movie. Way better movie. And it just keeps going. You know, it's just like there's always something there that keeps your interest, or they throw a curveball in there, and it just keeps going and going and going. And the performances are good. The little girl does Abra. There's a lot of scenes that are just really fun. It's not technically horror. You know, like it can be like dark fantasy with the humor, but it still, you know, has the horror elements towards the end, when they go somewhere, and they kind of show that in the trailer what technically where they go. And that's probably the one part where people are going to be the decisive about it, is the last act of the movie, saying, you know, it's a lot of fan service, and I can kind of see the, you know, point and reasoning of it. But that first, you know, 2 hours are really good. And again, I didn't mind the ending. You kind of know what's going to happen from the very beginning, so it's not really a big thing. I mean, they do try to, you know, do a lot of Kubrick style directing, and Mike Flanagan does great. He's probably one of the better horror directors out there.
I mean, kind of got to with a sequel to, a technical sequel to The Shining.
Yeah. But they do well with just making it its own in the first half, you know, the first 2 hours, with, you know, the what they do with the Rosie the Hat and them going back and forth in their minds and battling, and a lot of fun little neat, you know, parlor tricks that they do. I don't want to give any, you know, the stuff away. I will say, like, I never read the book. I like read the first couple pages just to see what happened. And again, the very first couple pages is Danny taking care of the girl, you know, the lady in room 237 in the first, you know, first couple pages that I read. So that's the very first part of the movie. So they do a good job. I mean, I enjoyed it. Again, I was really enthralled and, you know, engrossed, you know, it was really engrossing. And it just kept my interest. And like, here I was just like, all right, keep going, keep going, keep going. I'm not bored at all. And like overall, I walked out. I was like, again, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't mind it. Again, rewatched The Shining beforehand just to get my memory freshened up, and again, they do a lot of things. Again, fan service, people are going to go bicker back and forth on. But nonetheless, it's still an enjoyable movie on its own merits. And, yeah, there's a few things here and there that people probably are going to bicker back and forth on. And that's what people do with The Shining, so it's going to be there. People think it's the greatest movie ever. Others, overrated. You know, you never know. But on its own merits, it's a good watch. And I enjoyed it. And I didn't really see too many – I didn't have too many problems with it. I mean, I kind of think that the kind of – some of the characters on Rosie's side kind of got dealt with rather quickly. I'm not sure if they got elongated scenes in the book because, again, I never read it. So they kind of just like kind of swept them under the rug. And a few times I was like saying, okay, who's this person? Who's that person? So they didn't really flesh out them characters that much. I mean, maybe one or two got fleshed out, but none of the rest of them did, except for Rosie. But again, it's just Rosie that you need, and she does a great job leading up to everything. And again, her to my, you know, what they do with her, it kind of gets, you know, not too much of a, you know, thing that happens with her, but it's still a good watch. I mean, I enjoyed it. I had a fun time watching it. They do a lot of fun things with it, and I do recommend it. So, Ian, thoughts on Dr. Sleep?
This was one that I was really wanting to, you know, I've been keeping my eye out for, you know. I was going to try to go see it, you know, whenever it came out. I was kind of worried because, you know, I was unsure about it just based on the, you know, the trailer. The trailer made it seem like it was going to be, you know, decent, but, you know, there's those times when they just make it look like it's going to be good, but then it's utter crap. So I was kind of on the fence about it, but now, you know, with your, I'm glad I got your review on that because now I really want to go see it even more now than what I did, you know, earlier. So,
yeah, I mean, like I said, the only thing it's a long watch, you know, but it's one of those that does fly by. It's not It Chapter 2 where it feels long and you know it's long. It's, you know, it's like it's 2 hours and basically 2 hours and a half, and it flies right by because you're really engaged in everything and the characters and the storyline and the arcs and it flies right by. And that's crazy. You know.
Yeah, and you know, and it sounds like it's, you know, definitely right up my alley of, you know, my interests. And so I'm definitely can't wait to go see it. Might have to check it out like Tuesday, $5 Tuesdays at the movie theater. So why not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll have to get your review of it on the next show just to get your, you know, as we always do when one of us sees a movie, the other one has to, you know, give their opinions on it. Like a little bit, you know, whenever I get to see The Lighthouse, you know, I'll give my opinions on it. But yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I can't wait for your review. But yeah, I mean, Dr. Sleep was fun. I had fun with it. It's a good time at the theater, you know. It's way better, like I said, better than It Chapter 2, better than Pet Sematary. I mean, is it on par with The Shining? Probably not, but for its own merits, it does well with the material because it's going between two things. It's doing a sequel to The Shining in book form, but also a sequel to the movie. And so it's like there's like two different ongoing things. And I think he managed to balance it out pretty well, making
That's
it its
good.
Own thing and intertwining both the book of The Shining and the movie. I guess more so the movie because of some of the things that they do in it. You know, and like camera tricks and dissolves that Kubrick did. So there's like definitely a lot of nods to the movie Shining than more so the book. But he, you know, he manages he blends it well. And again, it goes by really fast and it keeps you, you know, like, where's this going? And you kind of know where it's going, but it does, you know, like, this is cool. This is, interesting. This is, you know, it does well. So I will say it's a recommendation. probably going to be in my top 10. We'll see when the year comes out. We'll see. But that's going to do it for Dr. Sleep. Ian, any other words on Dr. Sleep?
Not really. Just, you know, excited to actually go out and see it. I'm sure one of the 5 theaters that are around me have it. So.
Yep. So it has to be. I mean, it's all over my town, you know, where all the theaters have around me. You know, there's 3 that I go to. One that's close, one that's a little far, one that's pretty far. They all have it. So that's going to do it for Dr. Sleep, and we're going to go on to the one thing I hate you for right now, because I want to see this movie. And when I went to see Terminator Dark Fate, I asked, like, will you be getting The Lighthouse in? And they said, no, it's too art house. And I just looked at the guy like, why is it too art house? It's like, again, they're not the ones that get the movies. It's like the theater execs that like pawns out the movies. I don't exactly know what the whole theater, how you get movies and make money and all that ordeal. And like, you get this and you get that. You can get certain movies here. You can't get certain movies there. I don't understand all that. So I know it's a game of chance, really. So you get what you get, hopefully to, you know, reimburse to make your money. For the theater execs, you know, the bigs that runs the chains, and two art house, and apparently it's all over the place here because it's not any of the 3 theaters near me, and not even down towards Lexington still. So I was like, why is it not down towards Lexington? Because usually they typically get everything, but they didn't this time. Apparently it was only in bigger cities, and I assume Lexington would be a bigger city, but no, Louisville got it. So, Ian, you lucky bastard, tell us about The Lighthouse.
What that guy said was pretty correct. It is incredibly art house. Like, this was like a love note to art house films. The movie, not a lot happens. It's a 2-hour movie and hardly anything happens. Yeah, you got, it starts off with, Robert Pattinson's character. Well, I gotta get his name. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, his name is Winslow. I don't know why that was so hard for me to remember. He sets out to work on the lighthouse with William Dafoe's character, Thomas. And it's literally just those two in a house. They eat, drink. William Dafoe's character farts a lot. I mean, a lot. It's even a line in the movie where Robert Pattinson was like freaking out. It's like, I'm had it with you goddamn farts. Because he speaks in a Brooklyn kind of accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a... It's really interesting. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to, because a lot of the talking points are major plot points, so I don't want to try to give too much away because it is a really simple film, even though it is a 2-hour long movie, in which it really didn't feel that long, which was weird, you know, for how simple it was. But it was mostly just Robert Pattinson's slowly going mad. And apparently his last William Dafoe's last, like, helper went mad as well, and went, he died, was, I believe that's one of the things, because he went crazy. And it didn't really explain, like, how he died. Then you got this, he's, within the first couple hours, he gets, Robert Pattinson's character, Winslow, he gets followed around by a seagull. And it's, like, kind of coming at him. And he, like, tries to shoo it away. And William Dafoe character's like, "That's it's bad luck to kill a seagull." Well, he does. And kills. It was kind of quick. He like he flew, he fell, and it like flew at him, and he kicked it, and then bad stuff started happening, like really bad stuff, and he started going crazier and crazier, and then he started dreaming about a mermaid because he was given a little mermaid thing, and that little mermaid figurine was the three out of the four masturbation scenes in the whole movie. So if you want to watch it, you got that to look forward to. And there is a, you do see some mermaid titties and a big giant mermaid vagina with flaps and all. And that really has no point to the movie at all, to any of the plot points. It's the trailer made it look like it was going to be about a mermaid and all that, but they don't really do anything with it. It just kind of happens in a, like, very dramatic scenes, and you're kind of left wondering throughout the whole movie what's real and what's not, and what's, like, really happening. And it's really, the movie is black and white, tiny screen like the old days, and it was really gritty. Some of the audio was distorted, and I really liked the way the movie looked and sounded. They do such great job with, like, the lighting and the how the shadows are casting, like, dramatic scenes are just super, like, it, I don't know, it's just the shading and everything became so much deeper and more meaningful the way it was just portrayed in it. Because I like black and white films. I absolutely loved it. And so when I saw that this movie was in black and white, I freaked out. Because I'm like, oh my God, this is right up my alley. It's definitely art house. And just some of the things, it's just like a, I don't know. It's really hard to describe the feeling because, you know, it's just in the moment kind of thing. But
it's one of those things that you have to witness to understand or get the true impact of. I mean, review is good and everything, but it's just one of those you have to let the filming, you know,
be there.
You know, flood over you, basically, you know, let the waves hit you and make your own opinion and just get engaged in the story and let it unfold to however it unfolds for 2 hours. So it's just going to be a lot of, a lot of randomness, but with like a central story arc and just a lot of things that just, you know, questions, a lot of questions. Go ahead.
I don't know, I was going to say, it's just, there was, William Dafoe's character brings up a lot, like, how long have you been here?
Has it been 2 weeks? Has it been a year? Has it been an hour? Like, he keeps asking him, like, how long he's been there. And he's kind of like this rough and sea captain, like, basically, like, the stereotype of a sea captain. You got the bad leg that doesn't move well. And honestly, it just... There's really the most of the movie is just them sitting, eating, and fighting, and drinking, and crying, and like it's just, and it just it literally bounces around from like different emotions and everything, and like certain setups for like just in like repetitive scenes that eventually lead to something. Like, in everything, you know, it's every time something pops up, a little bit more comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those movies you got to pay attention to, or because if you're not going to pay attention to it, then it's like, boom. You're like, whoa, where did this come from? Because it just, it's in the subtle details, like the things that they do and all that. And it's, and William Dafoe's character is really protective of the light from the lighthouse, and the ending is just leaves you with more questions than answers, and just like, oh shit. That's how I was like, oh okay. But it's just the descent into this movie. And like the experience, and like I said, you know, it's really hard to like navigate such a simple movie. Like, I mean,
it's technically like what it is. It's like a ship on the ocean, and there's a lighthouse, and the waves, you know, making it unsteady for the ship, and it's bouncing around. You know, you don't know when you'll get there. You don't know if you'll come across a storm on the way to it, or it's just a descent. You know, that voyage. From the beginning to end, you know, it starts
definitely.
Out all quaint and easy, and then it just harder and more, you know, crazy as it goes along. So it's interesting. Now, Ian, being that you've seen this, which one would you prefer from this director? Do you like The Lighthouse more, or do you like The Witch more?
That's the problem. I never got a chance to actually like sit down and watch The Witch. I know it's on Netflix, but every time I get a chance to sit down and watch something, we always get like a director or something else.
Mm.
I never get the time. And my wife, she saw The Witch and it made her really uncomfortable. So it's one of those movies I have to like watch by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And after seeing this, because you know, I've been on the fence about The Witch because, you know, the mixed reviews and all that. After watching The Lighthouse, I was, like, kicking myself in the ass. I was like, this movie is really good, so I'm going to sit down and make myself watch that movie. But honestly, like, I don't know. It's just, I just can't wait to get your take on it. If you watch it online and it's kind of, it's probably the actual movie because one of my favorite scenes in the movie is like this distorted like scream. Oh, so great. Because it really felt like an older film. And that's what I just like, oh yes, finally. I've been saying that they need to make more black and white movies since, you know, they don't really do that anymore. And it'd be a little different, and I'm glad that they did.
I'm assuming by the director of The Witch, I mean, coming off that, your next one has to be, you know, something else. And apparently it's something else. So I can't, hopefully one of these days I'll be able to see it in one of these theaters around me. If not, hopefully it'll get a wider release because I know it says in select theaters. I mean, if you still, because the little logo ads still pop up, see the lighthouse and select theaters. And I go there and I type in, you know, location, and it says, no, I even looked in West Virginia. Like, there's nothing in West Virginia. Okay, where the fuck's this movie? I'm going to have to make the 3-hour drive to Louisville just to see this thing. I'm not going to do that. That's too much. But I want to see it. Hopefully it's wider release. I need to see this movie. Just, you know, as a person who's seen The Witch, I guess there's horror elements to it. So as a horror fan, and just as a cinema viewer, you know, I just want to see, because I always like, you know, stuff that goes a little crazy, and or just takes a different approach. Because I know you're saying, you know, how this one, like, you have to pay attention to it. I know that kind of reminded me of another film called Huckle, where it's like the movie's like completely silent. Like, there's no dialogue in the movie, and you have to pay attention to it because, like, there's a murder happening in the background, and, like, all the details are in the background. So you have to pay attention to the background more so than the front, you know, like what's happening in front, because it's like a lot of images of like animals and flowers and bugs, close-ups of that, and like in the very far distance something is happening, so you have to really pay attention to it. So it's like, okay, so it's, you know, but it's not, of course it's not going to be anything like Huckle, which is again like sort of art house as well. So again, it's out there, you know. Again, El Topo stuff, you know, Holy Mountain stuff like that, I always love those weird art house experimental, you know, movies. So I'm always interested in seeing where a newer director goes, and this is definitely something, again, I need to see, and hopefully I will. But you got anything else you want to mention about The Lighthouse, Ian? Oh, Ian's call dropped. Well, apparently Ian has dropped, so sadly, I think that's going to do it for the show, because I'm not able to take his call once he drops. But I am looking forward to The Lighthouse, so I'll keep everyone, you know, whenever it comes around, I will have a review of it. Next week on the show, probably a special review. There's a lot of stuff. I can upload something and do a Boneyard review or just something like that, some kind of special show. Probably a good listener's choice show, but haven't got a chance to do that yet, but that's still on the upcoming horizon. So anyway, that's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Your skin.